all make mistakes. And part acknowledging that is part of what builds trust, right? Because it's part of being human as a leader, being approachable, right? And being seen as someone who is themselves vulnerable will make you more trusted as a leader, because it creates that bond and that connection between you and your workforce, your customers, your partners.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change Podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and build heart-healthy organizations with a culture of purpose, trust, and integrity. My name is Tobias Sturzon, and I'm the co-founder of Heart Management. Trust is fundamental to an organization's existence. Just like a marriage or partnership suffers badly when trust is compromised, organizations and even societies do as well. So what does it take to be trustworthy? While it's essential, it's becoming increasingly apparent that it's not enough to be seen as competent, to create a great product or service, or to offer up superior customer care. We also need to be seen as ethical, people and organizations that operate with integrity and a bigger purpose. As trust in government is sadly waning in many parts of the world, people are increasingly looking to businesses to deal with issues like climate change, income inequality, and corruption, or to at least not contribute to the problems. I really wanted to have a conversation with someone who has a deep insight into the importance and role of trust. So I was delighted to talk to Tonya Rees, responsible for Edelman's Trust Barometer and the leader of the firm's Global Knowledge Agenda. Edelman, a global public relations firm's Trust Barometer survey, has measured public trust globally for over 20 years. It's frequently cited by major news outlets, politicians, and academics when discussing the topic of trust. So without further ado, let's welcome Tonya Rees to an exciting conversation about trust, about how it's changing, and about what we as organizations need to do to be seen as trustworthy. Tonya, it's a privilege to have you on the podcast today.
It's great to be here, Tobias.
I've had the joy of interviewing you before on behalf of a client, and I was really impressed by both your deep knowledge and your passion for the topic of trust. It might sound like a no-brainer, but why do you think personally that being seen as trustworthy is so important for organizations and businesses?
That's a great question. Thank you. Trust is, we think of it as a currency that allows other things to happen. The reason it's so valuable is that, unlike reputation, which is based on a record of your past behavior, trust is future looking, right? It is an expectation of how you're going to behave in the future. And it allows me in a relationship to be vulnerable. When I send you my money over the internet, I am giving you money without walking out of a store with a product in my hands. I trust you that you're going to send me a product. I trust you that if there are problems with that product, that you will handle those problems, that you will handle the return smoothly. So everything we do and all interactions in personal relationships, in business relationships, and with our institutions require a certain amount of trust. And we think it's the most precious thing that any company and any organization can have.
So what is your own personal kind of relationship with trust? Where did you, do you have an example or a story where you personally kind of understood the importance of trust and maybe specifically in related to organizations?
It matters in so many ways, right? But I'll give you one example of an epiphany that I had in terms of the importance of trust in a business context. Do you remember when Apple introduced an iPhone that had a problem with the antenna? and there was some interference that happened. This was a few years ago. Did that change anything about the passion, dedication, loyalty, and commitment that people have for Apple products? It did not, right? People who are fans of Apple, who are Apple users, didn't worry in them for a moment because they trusted that their favorite brand was going to do the right thing, fix the technical problem, and get back to delivering them the quality that they expected, right? And this suspension of criticism, right, was based on the huge amount of trust that Apple had with its customers. So trust is something that can get you through a crisis, a reputational crisis. And in today's world, when you just have no idea what somebody is going to say about you on social media, for instance, and we know how quickly that news can travel before you even realize there are rumors that exist that may or may not be true. There could be fake news about you in the internet. Trust is going to give you a chance to respond and to tell your side of the story before somebody else comes to a conclusion. So even if you don't believe that trust is critical because maybe your product is great, your experience is great, and people buy you for other all kinds of other reasons, it is still an insurance policy that only by being trusted are you going to have the ability to really be resilient in a world that is changing as quickly as the world is today.
Something that I've seen in organizations that have gone through scandals, and specifically where it's been leaders who have done something which broke trust with their people. And something that I've seen is that when there has been this kind of super high level of trust, and where things have kind of a lot of things have kind of worked on trust in terms that people were very ready to trust the leader, to give them a lot of leeway in terms of their decisions and to follow what they decided and the direction that they're set. And so when they've gone through this kind of cataclysmic experience of that trust being broken, of that leader doing something that they thought was totally out of character, that getting that the sting is so much harder in a sense, that the pain is so much stronger because we expected something different. And I think about that, for example, if you think about an organization like the Red Cross, for example, in Sweden, we had a scandal around that where you think an organization where you expect something, a certain thing from, and then something happens that really, really breaks trust. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, trust is very hard to earn and very easy to lose. And one misstep like that can have an enormous impact on not just that leader's reputation, but then, of course, also the whole organization. Where was the oversight? And the impact can be so long lasting, right? When an extreme example, we have measured trust. The trust barometer has been around for 21 years. So in 2008, 2009, when the Fukushima accident happened in Japan, and not only was it a major accident due to, you know, safety and so on issues, but then the aftermath and how badly and poorly it was handled, not only by the company, but also, frankly, by the government, right, at the time, not being foreseen as being forthcoming with information quickly enough, not moving quickly enough to address and provide information to people. The trust in Japan institutions, right, in Japanese institutions, fell like a rock from one year to the next. And here we are, how many years later, 10 years later, and still trust in Japan has not recovered to the same level that it was before Fukushima. There was also an impact on the energy industry, not just in Japan, but around the world. Right? The industry sector as a whole fell in trust around the world and has not recovered fully to that same level. So breaking faith, and, you know, it's one thing to have a crisis and then be seen as managing that crisis well, right? Because that in many ways can actually be a trust building opportunity, which is counterintuitive, right? But let's say an accident happens. Let's say you have to recall a product. If you manage the process well, you'll see in the tracking a small dip and then potentially even an increase in trust, because now we know that you are going to put everything on the line to make sure that your customers are safe, that you are doing the right thing, that you are handling this well. So I'm going to trust you even more because I've seen you in action. I've seen how you respond. But if you mismanage a crisis like that, a reputational issue, if you take too long to address a scandal or to, you know, fire the person that needs to be fired, if you try to cover things up, it is going to take a long, long time and a lot of work, if ever, to recover that trust.
That's fascinating from the perspective of something that we have talked a lot about in this podcast, and that is this kind of the danger of kind of protecting an image of thinking that we're the good ethical organization, which can lead us. And of course, that is something we should all aspire to be. But that assumption that we are that can lead us to protect ourselves against any information that would say otherwise. So, for example, I've seen in organization after organization, when there are these major scandals, there have always been, or small scandals, but there have always been red flags. There have always been information. There's always been allegations and things that have not been really taken seriously by the leadership. And many times they have even actively tried to work against it and fight the voices and so on, or yeah, kill the messenger. And I'm just thinking, based on what you're right now saying, that the cost of doing that, I mean, it's not just that it's that you break credibility with people within your organization, but you're actually breaking trust for you might be breaking trust for years or I mean, for such a long time with people outside of the company.
There's no question. And as we know today, there really is no upside to trying to cover up or to be untruthful about things. Because if journalists, the media, and external watchdogs, NGOs perhaps, don't find you out, then at some point your employees are going to speak out and tell the truth, right? Because it is hugely important to workers today that they work for a company that has integrity and that aligns with their belief system, right? So I guess my message would be just do the right thing. Then you have nothing to hide and nothing to worry about. That's what my mother always told me, and that's what I told my son. Works for CEOs too.
No, and I think it's a great advice, but I also think it needs to combine with that at some point we will all do something that we're not proud of, something that we're going to regret. And the way we deal with that is maybe will maybe say more about us and say more about our organizations than just doing the right thing in that sense.
No question, right? We all make mistakes. And it's part, acknowledging that is part of what builds trust, right? Because it's part of being human as a leader, being approachable, right? And being seen as someone who is themselves vulnerable, right? Will make you more trusted as a leader because it creates that bond and that connection between you and your workforce, your customers, your partners. So acknowledge that you're human, you know, and human beings do make mistakes, of course, but be very clear about your intentions and your purpose, right? And then that combination is what creates trusting bond, trustworthiness.
So we're going to jump into the research and just thinking about how you think about trust in the Edelman Trust Barometer. But something that I found so fascinating is the way that you've come to define what it means to be trustworthy, that you break it up basically in two different parts, competent and ethical. And could you say something about how you came to that conclusion and what evidence you've seen that that's been the right thing over time, and also what being ethical or competent, what that means?
I think, and I don't have the trending research on this, right? But if you look at the history of how companies communicate and how brands advertise, it used to be enough for a product or a company to be seen as competent. I need this soap to get my clothes clean, right? And all advertising was focused on this. In the US, we had a Good Housekeeping seal of approval, right? Yes, this soap will get your clothes clean. Today, that is no longer enough. Do I need you to get my clothes clean to do what you say you're going to do, right? To be a reliable product, to deliver a good customer experience? Absolutely. But that is now table stakes, right? I also need to know that the company behind this brand is an ethical company, that your supply chain is not contributing to problems in the world, whether it's climate change or other problems, that you're not using labor, you know, child labor in your supply chain. So my expectations go now beyond the product that I'm buying to how good is the company behind the product. And that goes beyond the company itself, right? I want to know, are you using your influence to make sure that your partners and your suppliers are doing the right thing? Are you perhaps even using your influence in a public affairs sense, right, to actively look for change to happen, whether it's addressing climate change, doing the right thing in the pandemic, doing the right thing when it comes to discrimination and inequality? And today's consumers and the general population, when they think about business, right, and what their expectations are for business, their expectations are much broader than they've ever been. So trust is actually built, we have found, and our research has found, across multiple dimensions, of which competence is just one. Other dimensions are purpose, right? Do we have an understanding of your purpose in the world beyond what you do as a business? Are you dependable? Do you keep your promises, right? Do you have integrity? And is there an alignment between your values and mine? And what we have found is that those ethical dimensions are three times more important to predicting how much I will trust you than the competence on its own.
That is so, so helpful. And I'm thinking, as we talk a lot about organizational culture in this podcast, I think many times when we think about culture, we'll think about what are the things that will kind of help us be a high-performing team, high-performing organization, what are the things that kind of can help our success, and what are perhaps the things that slow us down in how we operate. But I'm thinking that there's a third question that we need to ask ourselves more often, which is, what are things in our culture that could ultimately get us totally off track? And I'm thinking that here's where a lot of the kind of ethics part comes in. I mean, in terms of are we living our values with integrity? Are we operating with a bigger purpose? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the things that can trip you up and slow you down, right? Because they matter across so many stakeholders. And if you think about this from the perspective of a CEO for a moment, a CEO today is truly under pressure from all sides to change the way their operating manual for how they run their business, right? And these expectations that you do more than just run a great company, that you also do good in the world, are coming not just from consumers, they're also today coming from your employees. A recent study that we did in September of this year showed that about 2 in 3 employees are now actively choosing jobs based on their beliefs, right? They want jobs that allow them to express their values through their work, right? And they want to be working at companies that align with their values and beliefs. So you have consumers putting pressure on companies, you have employees, And even investors today are frankly seeing upside, both financially and in other ways, for themselves and their institutions on behalf of which they're making investments, in rewarding companies that have done, have made more progress with ESG, with addressing environmental good governance, and even a, and this is a preview of a report that will be released in a few weeks, they're even saying that when I see a company where employees are speaking up and where there's employee activism, that that is a sign of a healthy culture for a company. So to me, that's a real change in even how investors are seeing and judging companies and the criteria they're using to decide who they can trust.
So you measure trust in different institutions like the media, government, NGOs, and business. And in both 2020 and 2021, business has sadly been the only institution that is seen as both competent and ethical. And there's a lot of work still to do. And I think we should definitely talk more about that. But why do you think trust is so low in the other institutions? And let's kind of take media out of the picture here, because I don't think that's too much of our audience. But we definitely have, I think, a lot of people within the public and the NGO sector. So why do you think that trust is so low in those institutions?
It's a great question. And trust is low in NGOs and government for different reasons. NGO has one strong suit, which is that it is seen as ethical, right, as an institution. And in fact, NGOs are the most ethical of the four institutions that we measure. Unfortunately for NGOs, they're not seen as being very competent, right, or having the ability to get things done. And I think that for NGOs, there's really a big question about what is the role that NGOs are expected to play today, right? And right now, I don't know that there's consensus in the community about the role that NGOs should be playing and what it is that they can do to truly better showcase the impact that they can have, right? And so there's debate around, is it about being more militant, right, and being more of a watchdog, or is it about joining in, building partnership and building collaboration to move things forward and perhaps fill the gap between the institutions, right? Which of those are going to give NGOs greater effectiveness and greater impact? So the question for NGOs is, how do we increase our competence score? For government, unfortunately, government is seen as being neither ethical nor competent. So has a lot of work to do, both in terms of making people feel that it is capable of getting anything done. And secondly, there's a lot of work to do that government knows the right thing to do, right? And is aligned with our belief on what it should be doing. So a lot of work to do for government.
Do you think that a part of that is just that we are so like kind of highly politicized today, and so whether if it's a government that does not have my kind of political brand, that I'll not trust them, not because I think that they generally, or that I more objectively think that they're doing a bad job, but more from the point that I just don't agree with their political persuasion?
Yeah, I think, of course, you know, I know we're not talking about the media, but there's a great example in the media that I don't trust the media in general, but I trust my channel and my reporter that I like, right? And some of that certainly exists in politics as well, right? I don't trust politicians, but I trust my guy. The other thing that we do see in the political realm or in government as an institution, the more local we make the question, the higher the trust level. So people may not trust government in general. They may not trust the national government, but perhaps I trust my local government, right? And I think a lot there's a huge trend towards trust becoming more and more local, right? In the absence of being able to trust institutions, in the absence of being able to trust information, I am much more likely to trust that which I truly can see, feel, touch, and influence. And I think that influence and the idea that my voice is heard, my voice is represented, is a huge part of trust when it comes to institutions. And that's much easier to do with a more local government than it is with a big national or even with multinational institutions. The other thing I would say about governmental and institutions and NGOs as well, is the more you can be clear about your purpose and your mission, right, the higher your trust is going to be. So as an example, the UN in general is more trusted than the EU as a multinational institution. And both of those are more trusted than the IMF. So if you take those three as examples, you know, the general population is much more likely to understand the mission and the purpose of a UN than they might of, say, a monetary institution such as the IMF.
That's so, so interesting. And I wanted to shift the focus over to business. And I think that there's a lot of, I mean, I read it very often, these articles that talk about that now multinational corporations are some of a lot of the 100 biggest economies, as I understand it, are multinational corporations. So I'm also thinking that there's a new kind of expectation from business of taking a responsibility in the challenges of the world, in things like income inequality and in the climate change and so on. So how do you see that in your data?
Oh, it shows up in so many ways, right? When people make a judgment about a company or a business, they are looking at your overall impact on the world, on society, on my community, and on my life, right? Not just whether you are a well-run, profitable business. Are you allowed to be a well-run, profitable business? Absolutely. So we have very long-standing and very clear data that says it is absolutely possible, and in fact, it is okay for companies to both make money and also do good in the world, right? So people recognize the role of business as a driver of the economy, as a creator of jobs, and also as an engine of innovation. When we look at big challenges such as the pandemic, there is an enormous role for business to play as someone that innovates, provides new solutions, can quickly adapt and evolve, and also as an institution that is responsible for the well-being and safety of employees and their extended family and community. So there's a tremendous amount of recognition of the positive impact that business has in the world. And of course, there's also recognition and awareness that there are potential negative impacts, right? And people are much more informed today and in many cases, actively looking at what is, before I buy a product, before I buy a stock as a retail investor, before I choose a job, right? What is this business doing, not just to ensure it is doing in general, good in the world, but also that it is minimizing any negative impact it might have in the world. And people are so informed and I think much more aware around this and much more intentional in the choices they make than I think many business executives realize.
As we see this outside pressure growing on companies to stand up, to make their voice heard on different issues, I'm thinking that there's also a growing danger that the initiatives will lack integrity and authenticity, that it's we do it to get praise from the people in our communities or from the general public or to get people to choose our products and so on. And I think we see examples of that constantly. What's your perspective on how leaders can navigate the tension on one hand, that you're being asked to speak out, and on the other hand, of doing something that is not really something that you can live up to with integrity.
Yeah, we call that trust washing, right? If you make commitments and you are not sincere about those commitments, it will have a negative impact on trust, right? Because essentially, you're not being authentic, and you're going to damage your reputation and your trust levels, because people today are incredibly smart about smelling when something is not authentic. So it is so critical that that any actions that you take truly are aligned with your core purpose as an organization, right? That these are actions that you really can live up to and commit to and see through over the long term. The actions will always speak louder than words, and actions have to be taken before you start talking and praising, you know, the commitments that you're making. It has to, of course, start with getting your own house in order, right? So if you're making commitments around inequality, around climate change, around even the pandemic or any number of issues that you might take on, the very first place to start is internally, right? What are the things that you need to do to make sure that you are living up to those standards yourself before you take any actions externally, right? And take those actions, make those commitments, make those changes before you start talking about it externally. It's so important that you act before you talk.
On that note, and I think that's so incredibly true, but I wanted to ask you something, and we talked before this interview. I raised this concern, and I know that it's not something that you can comment on in detail, but still, I've seen people share articles on the company Edelman, who is behind the Edelman Trust Barometer, that, for example, gives examples of Edelman working kind of a bit under the radar with oil companies that question climate change and things like that. And again, we don't need to go into the details of that, since I don't think that's your area of work, and as is understood, as it's not something that you can particularly comment on. But I still wanted to ask you, in terms of being a company that is kind of giving this message to organizations around the world, how do you as a company struggle with this internally, or how do you kind of take that challenge of integrity seriously yourself?
Thank you for that question. We hold ourselves to the highest standards, and we will not work with clients that deny climate change or that deny science. So I'm not sure of the details of the information that you saw, but it could be, you know, I can't comment on it because I'm not sure of the details of what you saw, right? But that is our policy, and that is true across the work that we do with all clients.
And I think what you just said is something that I think is dangerous in a sense, because I'm thinking that we're saying that we hold ourselves to these standards and these are the policies that we follow. But isn't it true that if we look at like organizations, and again, I don't want to make this really about Edelman, but just generally, that it's easy for us to make those statements, but it's also easy for us to break them, and that we don't always live up to those values in the way that we think that we should or say that we should.
I'm not sure I agree with that. You know, we know the downside to breaking trust, right? So when faced with a choice of either, you know, speaking the truth, following science, being honest, or risking your trust, right? We will always make sure that we are protecting trust, because we know how valuable that is. We have done some incredible work with clients that we're very proud of that really go against what you would expect a business to do. I'll give you one example. REI In America, as you might know, the day after Thanksgiving is typically a very big shopping day. People start their holiday shopping season, you know, at the end of November. And so it is usually you see advertisements, you know, the stores open after at midnight. There are lines of customers, and it is a shopping frenzy. And what REI, which sells outdoor clothing, said, you know, we're going to do something different. We're going to close our stores, give our employees the day off to enjoy with their families, and tell our customers, instead of spending the day shopping, go outside. And they literally ran a campaign advertising the opposite, right, of come to the store and buy things on sale. They said, do not go shopping. Go outside instead. And the result was that there was so much word of mouth conversation and so much earned media about this, because it's such the opposite of what you would expect a company to do, that they ended up beating every sales record going into that holiday season from previous years. Another example, a client of ours, CVS, wanted to rebrand themselves as a company. They're a drugstore pharmacy chain, wanted to rebrand themselves as a company dedicated to wellness. And we worked with them to change, to remove products from their shelf, meaning they stopped selling tobacco in their stores, right? So the opposite of what you would expect a business to do, which is to stop selling a profitable item on its shelves. Why? Because they knew that in order to be trusted, in order to be believed as a trustworthy wellness company, they couldn't also be selling a product that kills people. So we don't think it's difficult to do the right thing if you are very clear about what your purpose is and what it is that you're doing in the world and how you want customers to see you.
And I really love those examples, and I think that it's such a great perspective in terms of looking at the work we do, and looking is this building trust, or is this in line with what we say that we are and what we say that we stand for, in and by that, is it actually something that can build or destroy trust with our customers or with a general audience? And I think that is so helpful. And of course, you talk about this perspective of our purpose and the importance of knowing your purpose as a company. What is some way that you think that a company should kind of engage with that to make sure that it is true, that it's authentic, and maybe another example that inspires you in terms of living that out?
You know, I think it starts very, as many of these things do, internally with your employees, right? And if you don't have a good answer, and if you don't know the answer to the question, what is your purpose? Ask the people that work for you, right? What is it that makes them come to work every day? What gets them out of bed and excited? What are the things they love about their job, right? And maybe what they will tell you are stories about how they have changed a customer's life, about how they've given a customer a great experience, right? What is it that is meaningful for those employees in how they interact with customers or with each other or with their partners, right? And I think you will learn a lot about the impact and the purpose that is at the core of what you do every day as a company. I always am so inspired by, it's one thing to do that as a startup, you can build a whole business around purpose and around a mission, but I'm always inspired when a very large company can do that as well. And I think about companies like from your part of the world, IKEA. And the work that they've done recently, where they had a give back, bring back your product day to encourage people to recycle and reuse materials rather than just throwing them away. Again, sort of the opposite of what you would expect a company like IKEA to do, right? You would think it's all about volume and pushing more cheap products through the consumer cycle. And instead they're saying, no, we are committed to a more sustainable world. Bring your products back and we will find a way to responsibly recycle them. You know, or a company like Unilever and what it is doing across so many of its product chains, right? To make sure, and across the company as a whole, to make sure that it is living up to its commitments around equality and sustainability, or even the longstanding work that they are doing with Dove around real beauty and the many different ways that, that those initiatives show up. You know, most recently, they did this beautiful campaign in the US celebrating natural hair among young girls of color, to a point where they even made a movie. They helped fund the creation of a movie that ended up winning an Oscar at the Academy Awards, right? So it is just wonderful to see when a larger company is very clear and intentional about its purpose, how much impact and influence it can have.
That's awesome. So, of course, we're still living in the pandemic, and you and I were talking before this interview about travel and how things look like now in the world. And of course, we're it feels like in a sense we're hopefully moving out of it, but we're still there. And I think that the pandemic has had a lot of impact on who we trust, what we trust, and what makes someone earn our trust. And what is perhaps something that you found the most interesting or most noteworthy of the shifts that have happened during the pandemic in terms of trust?
No, I think that the most profound effect is that it has just magnified so many of the other things that were, it's almost like it accelerated these trends, right? So before the pandemic, we already had data when we asked people which of these attributes are important and how important is each in making you trust a company or not and deciding whether you trust a company. We already had data that showed that how you treat your employees is the number one most important driver of trust that I look at as a consumer. Well, once the pandemic happened, that became even more important. Right? What people wanted to know first and foremost is, are you keeping your employees safe and treating them with dignity? Or are you making them come to work in unsafe environments? Right away, it was very black and white in the data that was the expectation, right? That you do the right thing for your employees first and foremost. So the other thing we saw happen is that existing societal concerns, such as the concerns around job loss or concerns around inequality, concerns around climate change, from before to after the pandemic increased exponentially. People realized, because we had experienced a large global crisis that affected all of us personally, you know, in a very direct way, it made these other potential threats more real in a way, right? It suddenly made it like, oh, wow, we really can have a global climate emergency, you know, and it's going to affect me personally. It's going to affect my community in a way that I think perhaps wasn't quite as real to people. It's like, oh, yeah, I've heard about this, but I can go on with my life and do some nice shopping and cook a nice dinner and it's fine, right? I think suddenly it was really a wake-up call that everyone has to be perhaps a little more engaged in what is happening in the world around us than I think many people really realized before that. So both in terms of our expectation for how our institution's going to behave, how our leader's going to behave, but I think there was also an increase in expectation of ourselves and our own level of engagement with the world. The other crisis that I really haven't mentioned much in this conversation is the information crisis, you know, which is another concern that we track, which I think also the pandemic has exacerbated. It has both made us better consumers of information, right? Because we've all had to learn a little bit of science, a little bit of statistics, a little bit of epidemiology. But at the same time has probably made us even more concerned that we may not be getting the most trustworthy information from all sources. So it's increased the level of awareness around the what I call the infodemic, or the lack of quality information as well.
That is so helpful. And I'm just thinking, if speaking to our audience of leaders of HR and ethics professionals, is there some other data in your research that you just think this is something that we, that is so important for us to think about as we're trying to build healthy organizations that are trusted by all our stakeholders? And what do you think is important for them to think about in terms of building that trust?
I always start with the concerns that people have, right? Because addressing, it is hard to trust when you're afraid. And so I think the first thing to do is to understand what are those fears, right? Especially when you think about your own workforce, your own organization, and your own employees. Are they concerned about job loss? Should they be, right? How can you address that? What are the other things in the community, right, that might be creating concerns and making it difficult for them to feel that they can really focus on their job? And what can you as an employer do to help address those concerns, to make sure people feel safe, that they have a future for their family, that they can believe in, that they are able to make their voice heard, both inside the organization and outside the organization? And what can you do to help solve problems? And perhaps even to be a place where some of the challenges can, that maybe don't have easy solutions, that are politicized in the public debate, can be discussed and spoken about in a safe and responsible manner. One of the things we have looked at in the data is, to what extent can employers perhaps create an environment where they can model a responsible approach to debating difficult topics, right? We don't always agree on everything. And at work, we need to learn how to have conversations when we don't agree on the way forward for a business decision. And those same skills that allow us to debate and discuss business decisions, we can perhaps learn how to use in the public sphere as well, right? So as employers, can you address not just the big problems, whether it's how can we be more sustainable in our consumption and the way we work? How can we ensure that the world is a more diverse and equitable place? But also, how can we talk about things that are difficult? How can we learn to know what information can be trusted or not trusted? Those are skills that perhaps I can practice and learn at work and then bring into the public sphere as well, right? So there are so many ways as an organization that you can work with your employees, right, to give them the power and the influence to solve these problems. And I think, again, that is the best place to start, is at home and with your employees.
That is so, so helpful, Tonya. And I just wanted to highlight this sentence that you said, that it's hard to trust when you're afraid. And I'm just thinking that that's perhaps something that we need to think about as well, in terms of, as we're recruiting people from different organizations, that they might bring experiences from their earlier employers that might cause them to find it hard to trust. And perhaps that's also why it's so important that we are very clear and open and honest in terms of what our purpose is, what the things that we're never going to compromise as an organization, and so on, for people to have that reinforced and know that that we operate in a different way, and to create that safe space for people to trust. So thank you so much for this conversation, Tonya. And as a final question, just want to ask you, how can people connect with you and follow your work?
So please do follow the work, right? We publish new reports on a regular basis. and they're always available for download and for reading on Edelman.com. You are welcome to contact me personally. My email address is firstname.lastname, so Tonia, T-O-N-I-A, dot Reese, R-I-E-S, at Edelman.com. I encourage anyone who has questions to reach out and get in touch with me directly.
Thank you so much for that, Tonia.
You're so welcome, and thank you. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Tobias.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.